Hey everybody, it's been a minute. I hope this finds you and your loved ones happy and healthy. I believe that the upcoming election in the United States is the most important of our lifetimes. I thought it would be interesting to have a conversation on this topic, but through a slightly different lens than you might be used to in these polarizing times, and I hope this conversation is thoughtful in that respect. I also believe that in times like these, it's important to have resources. Some of you may be questioning whether or not your contribution matters. It does, now more than ever before. You may also want some resources to educate friends, family, or acquaintances, or perhaps you want to know how you can volunteer to be a poll worker or make phone calls or send texts on behalf of your local representatives, Senate, or presidential candidate. The best resource for everyone is going to be vote.org, where you can register to vote, check your registration status, find your polling place, check for mail-in voting deadlines in your state, and so much more. Vote Save America is another great resource where you can learn more about all the candidates. You can even adopt a swing state and work to educate voters in those states on how to make informed decisions and help them get to the polls on election day, all from the comfort of your home. Now, there are so many resources at your disposal in 2020 that you literally have no excuse to not participate in our democracy. Now, all of these are going to be linked in the show notes for reference, so head over there and check them out. Now, my guest today is back for her third time on the show. She's dedicated the last 20 years of her career studying, building, and reinventing brands. Her work as an executive brand strategist gives her a unique perspective on the language used to describe an experience and the behavior that follows. And it's inspired her latest project, Rebranding America, a new show premiering this week on YouTube that explores the question, who would America be if it actually became who it said it was? Please enjoy my conversation with Krista Michelli. Hi, I'm Sean. I've always been curious about the answers to life's big questions. I thought it would be cool to seek some of those answers through conversations with others on a similar path. My intention with these conversations is to inspire you to think bigger, to challenge what you believe to be possible. I'd like to invite you to think outside the lines. Okay, Krista, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
I'm so excited to talk to you again.
I'm excited to talk to you. I feel like it's been ages.
Well, it's been ages since we recorded it. We talked a few weeks ago.
That's true.
But no, honestly, I'm trying to think of the last time you were on the show. I think it was like 2 years ago almost. So there's...
I mean, we did an episode, I distinctly remember... when Gio was super little, so it would have been 5 years ago, and I was terrified that he was making too much noise in the background.
Oh my god, that's right.
I think I was like bobbing him on my hip to try to keep him quiet the whole episode. So
that's right, I totally forgot about that. Wow, it's been a long time. It's definitely been. I can't believe. Have I been doing the show for 5 years? That's the part that's almost like.
I think so. That's a milestone.
Wow.
You should cheers yourself.
That's crazy. Cheers to that. I mean, I haven't been consistent, so I can't exactly celebrate, but it's a milestone nonetheless. So we're going to talk about your new show today, which I'm super excited to get into. I think I want to dive in though and just kind of talk about the fact that I feel that the conversation that we're having is going to feel very impactful in this moment. I want to be really clear that like we're not going to be talking about one party or candidate versus the other. We're going to really be talking about the ideals of America, right? And how far we've strayed from them and how we can get things back on track. And so my hope is that people will listen to this conversation with an open heart and an open mind. And more than that, my hope is that people will use their voice on November 3rd. And so I guess with that, tell us about your new project.
So I pitched this idea to my husband, who's a filmmaker, and I was terrified to even say it out loud because I had just made a comment like 2 months before in one of those like rapid fire Q&As that we've been having in quarantine because we're like, we're bored and we need new questions to ask each other. Something I saw on the internet was like, what's one of the things that you wish you would have done or, you know, still wish you could do? And I stupidly opened my mouth and said, I would love to write a book. And then I back that up with, but everybody writes a book. There's like nothing special about writing a book anymore.
So
everyone
many
books. Who, yeah, everyone who has an opinion is writing a book, whether they have the chops or not. And then a month later, and I said, I don't feel like I really have anything to say yet. I'm just saying one day it'd be cool to write a book.
Yeah.
And then about a month later, I got this idea, and I think I had like two cocktails before I told him. And I said, hey, I have the book idea. And I said, it's my response to how I feel about the state of our nation as an executive brand strategist. And here's what it is. And I just started talking. It was like a verbal vomit session. I like had the American Christian Church thrown in there and like all kinds of stuff. And he was like, rebranding America. You're wanting to rebrand America. You want America to be your client. And I was like, yeah, exactly. And he said, this isn't a fucking blog post. Wait, can I cuss on this show?
Yeah, of course you
I forget.
Can.
He's like, this isn't a blog post. This is a show. I want you to write the episodes and then I'll look over it and see if it's like, if we can actually do this. And so I did. I wrote 4 episodes in 4 days and I handed it over to a good friend of mine who actually wrote multiple seasons or was in the writer's room for multiple seasons of Handmaid's Tale, which feels very apropos.
I was going to say.
And she was our consulting producer and just like went at it with me and, you know, kind of refined it. And I handed it over to him and he was like, all right, let's do it. And I thought, oh shit, I literally was just trying to write a few blog posts, not do a show. So it's 6 episodes in total going through a full rebrand process that I would typically do on a client or an organization that I work for. Just with a nation, with an entire nation.
I mean, I have to say, I have seen the first episode. I'm hoping to get future episodes in advance of the rest of the people. But, I was immediately intrigued when you told me about this, and I think I called you like the second I finished the first episode because I was so excited, and I was so inspired by what you're doing. And we're gonna dive into, you know, what you're addressing more specifically. But I think I do want to say like off the bat that I've told you that this is going to be a bit challenging for me because I want to try really hard with this, not to integrate my perspective in the conversation.
Sure.
So, cause politics is like my thing and I'm super passionate. And so I'm going to try really hard to refrain because I feel so strongly about what you're trying to accomplish with this. And I don't want that to be lost on somebody because they're, you know, they don't necessarily align with my personal politics. And so,
sure.
I think my perspective is that I'm not always the best messenger for this, but I really do feel like my personal beliefs stem from my core understanding of what it means to be an American and how far it feels to me that we've strayed from that. And so I think that that's part of the reason that I'm so passionate and excited about what you're doing because, you know, I can't wait to help you share it with the world because I think what you're doing is really important. So I guess just to kind of dive in a little bit, I think these are incredibly challenging times for our country. And I think that that's an understatement. And I would actually say that regardless of your political affiliation,
sure.
What about the circumstances that we're living through right now inspired you to tackle something so big in this moment?
You know, it's so interesting because the way I see the world is very much cause and effect oriented. So, and that's the work that I do in branding as well, where I look at promises, right? Branding is the promise of an experience. Like that's what a brand is.
Yeah.
And I look at that and I say, okay, what was the promise? Like, what was the experience that was promised? And then what's the behavior? Does it match or does it not? And I think because that's how I see things, like anytime something big comes up in the news, which is like every millisecond now, but like you know, a couple of years ago, I think the first crushing blow for me was the border crisis with family separation. And I just remember thinking, I'm sorry, I'm not, at the time, and even currently, like, I'm very new to being politically active. And I thought, I'm pretty green on this, but didn't we say something about, like, bring me your tired, weary huddle masses? Like, I'm very confused right now. And that's literally the, like, response I had. I was just very confused by what we said and what, like, someone could interpret based on what we said, and then what actions they were met with, like what the behavior was that they were met with. You know, and as a mom, I think, well, as a human, but like really as a mom of young children, I sat at work every day and just like cried in my fishbowl of a corner office as a CMO of a tech company at the time. I was so upset by it, that I think that really was the kickoff to me exploring and deconstructing both, like my involvement as an American citizen, but also what it meant to be even a Christian in this in this environment. Like, there were so many things that particular news cycle woke me up to, which I think really made me particularly ripe when COVID hit. Particularly ripe at the insurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement after George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery. Like, there's just like so much that I was like, oh my God. Like, it was like Pandora's box of wow. Like, whatever promise I bought into, we are certainly not backing it up with behavior. And I don't know where that comes from, but I'm curious. And I would like to not be complicit. And I do think that's kind of, it all kind of culminated, you know, right after the Black Lives Matter movement in Minneapolis started. So it's been a brewing internal conversation. It just kind of started spilling out into something tactical that I could really respond to, I think, in the last 2 months. And that honestly, this show, the idea for the show, and then the completion of, you know, what you saw, episode one that comes out on Monday, that's happened within 2 months.
I mean, that's a pretty remarkable turnaround. You know, what's in really interesting about what you said is that a lot of people that I've talked to, because I've been super passionate about politics for a very long time, and I think I got much more involved in like 2016.
Sure. Why? I'm just kidding. We won't go there.
Right. But like, I've actually heard a lot of people that were not as involved, for lack of a better word, previously tell me that the turning point for them was like the kids in cages at the border. And that was like, you know, that was kind of like the inciting incident that caused them to look at things very differently. And what I find particularly interesting in your case is that I have known you for a long time, and I know and I respect very much the fact that you are strong in your faith. And I think it inspires me because you're a Christian and you actually live Christian values, which, you know, that's a whole nother podcast that we could go down that road. But I'm wondering if maybe you can talk a little bit about how that inspired you. You know, your faith and your values inspired you as you embarked on this endeavor.
Yeah, well, I mean, I grew up in the Bible Belt. So that's its own set of, don't even know what the word is, indoctrination, trauma. And I think, like any culture, you kind of just absorb whatever is fed to you if it's so consistent across every touch point of your life. And that certainly was the case growing up in the Bible Belt. Like, no one really questioned Christianity, or the like rituals surrounding it. And when I moved to LA, I brought that with me. I mean, I moved to LA to be a part of a graduate program that was funded by a church. Like, it's I was still like, it was like a lateral move. It was just like the more liberal side of that spectrum. And I think, honestly, like, I was always like the antagonist. Like, I was always pushing, Like, wait, why did we do that? Like, wait, what? But it was always like, oh, you're being emotional. Oh, you're just a girl. Like, it was very like patriarchal. And I don't think I knew what that word meant at the time. I just was like, oh, I'm just the only girl in the room. And they're like being jerks. But I think like going back to the border situation, I was like, wait, hold up. Like, does everybody like remember that Jesus was an immigrant? Like,
I don't think
maybe
people remember that. No, I think they for casually
like I'm
forget that.
so confused. Like they fled and like basically gave birth to like this Messiah in a barn because no one would take them because they were dirty immigrants. Like did we forget that storyline? Like I'm so confused. And again, that was like that. The child separation or the family separation thing was like very much a, oh my God, like are these systems connected? Are like, is the American like evangelical Christian church connected to the oppression of all of these people who, by the way, look eerily similar to the people in the Bible?
Well,
Like, can we just like take a hot second? And I think, again, not to like go back to family separation, but that really was the deconstruction of, you know, how I saw my involvement, not just in my faith community, but in our country as well, and how intertwined both are.
I mean, it's interesting because that's another thing where it's like I have a lot of people that are, I use the term Christian very loosely because,
Sure.
it is what it is. But I have a lot of those people in my life, and that's actually the first thing that I ask them. I'm like, Jesus, like, what do you know the story of Jesus? Because if you do,
Sure.
and that's where your beliefs stem from, then what are you doing? Like, it's just it's so. I don't know. It's so odd to me. Again, that's tangential, and we could go down that route
I
and
mean, you think it's tangential, but it's really not for America specifically. And
yeah.
I don't get into this in the show, but like as a Christian in America, I'm having to do a lot of reckoning and repentance, like using all the like Christian lingo. I'm really having to do a bit of holy shit, like I have been a part of this problem
But that's good though,
by
right? Isn't that what you're supposed to do as a Christian? I mean, from
I
what
mean
I remember about.
I don't know, like I don't know, like who, maybe I'm doing it wrong, I don't know, but I even like, you know, I'm like, wait, I'm just gonna go back and read the Bible for a minute because like we throw stuff around all the time and I don't think we actually have context. Like we repeat what we heard somebody else say. We didn't actually read it ourselves. And I've been reading the New Testament again and I'm like, Jesus was not messing around and he was very serious about his condemnation of people abusing their power in his name. So I'm like real into what he has to say. And that's been encouraging because I'm like, oh, the problem isn't Jesus. The problem are the people who claim to be for him.
And I mean, now more than ever, I think is probably a really good time to go back and read the Bible. Like, if
Oh,
that's
it's such a great roadmap for like today, which is
totally.
so sad, but also just like, oh, okay, like maybe I don't have to feel like I have to fix all this. Like Jesus knew this was coming. Like this is a pattern in human history. So I'm more than ever comforted by the idea that people would hate me because I'm more like I'm too controversial because I'm too much like Jesus than people hating me because I oppressed someone else in his name.
And to that I say, amen. Okay, so one of This is going to sound weird, but one of my favorite parts of each episode of your show is the end. And I say that very lovingly because you give your audience some homework at the end of each episode, and you kind of prompt them to reflect on, their own values and their own principles. And I'm curious to know, how does this equate with like a branding exercise that you would take a Fortune 500 company through?
I mean, I make them do homework. So that I think that's where that comes from. Part of that started because I felt like, I mean, people make brands, and if the people weren't committed to building the brand, like well, why should I be more committed to it than you are? So there was a bit of ownership there that really got built into my process over the last, 15 years. But I think, I just think you can't hold leadership accountable to behavior we ourselves are not willing to commit to, if that makes any sense.
No, totally.
So it really helps people recalibrate and do some excavation, because we don't do enough of that anymore. We just like react and, pivot and whatever the fancy business term is of the day for like keeping up with the Joneses, and not just owning who we are and like staying the course and committing. My process gives people permission and really demands that kind of active work towards the kind of experience you want to deliver. And again, you can't possibly know that if you're not connected with yourself first. And that's terrifying for a lot of people, but I think it's going to be the guide. I think is going to, the prompts are going to be really helpful.
I agree. I totally agree. We had actually, we talked initially about the importance of this project being politically agnostic. And I think, that's because American values are not liberal. They're not conservative. They're just founded on the basic principle that we're all created equal and we're entitled to, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, all that. Explain why this was so important to you and how you were able to achieve that through like the writing and the production.
Yeah, well, first of all, again, I come from a very conservative state.
Yeah.
I come from Kansas. Originally, I spent 22 years of my life there. I voted based on political affiliation. My first election, it was right after 9/11, and I voted for Bush because that's what you do. Yeah. If you're a Christian, you vote Republican, and I literally didn't ask any, I just like ... whatever, you're a Christian, you vote Republican, whoever was on the bill, do it. That's about as active as I got. I think I did vote Obama 2 times, and then voted for Hillary. And Hillary was the first time I had lost because I had voted for Bush. And then I voted. Like, that was like, oh my God, this is what it feels like for half the country to lose.
Totally.
Right? Like, I'm not literally not half the country. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I did feel that sense of, oh wow, people are like, if this is what it feels like, I don't want anyone thinking I'm asking them to vote a specific way, even though I do believe there's a specific way to vote in this particular election. I care more about people being critical thinkers.
Yep.
And creating space for that in such a hyper polarized environment that, to be totally honest with you, I think is lazy. I think this like binary of American politics is wildly, wildly lazy. It doesn't allow much room for people to think critically or imagine the world beyond this like targeted fight. Like, that's all we need you for, is this specific thing on this extreme end of the spectrum, and then you can go back to your normal life while us politicians do the job. And that's just not a democracy, and we've convinced people of that. I've been convinced of that.
Yeah.
I honestly thought like, oh, Obama's there, like everything will get taken care of because he's a black man, he must care about. And now I'm like, oh, he funded, like, he bankrolled mass incarceration in a way that Clinton never even like came close to. Like, I didn't know half of this stuff. I didn't even think to hold him accountable.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, he's a black dude. Like, he'll like, racism is over, and I'm a bad American.
Yeah.
For sure. But like, I use like Roe v. Wade as an example, where, you know, you grow up as a Christian in America thinking that's your only political job, is to overturn Roe v. Wade. And now, as an adult who like really can have compassion for both sides, which I really believe most Americans don't live on the fringes of this like this binary. I think most of us live in the center.
Yeah.
And that's like, oh, you're so wishy-washy and you're on the fence or whatever political terminology. I'm like, no, it's because it's a false binary. Neither of them fit all of our story. And it was designed that way, and it's kind of sad. And so if my only goal is to overturn Roe v. Wade, I'm not being trained to think of it as a democracy where I'm actually thinking about the world after it gets overturned and what systems actually need to be in place to support women and children to thrive in our communities. I am only thinking about overturning Roe v. Wade. And then what happens to our society when women don't have the support they need to, like, thrive while having children that they didn't intend to have? Yeah. Like, this entity, this group of people who are fighting for it, are they also willing to make sure that those individuals thrive if that right is taken away? And that's the kind of stuff I don't even, like, again, until like a year ago, I wasn't like a massive, like, abortion was not something I like cared about, to be honest, even as like a feminist, but like, that's probably because I took it for granted,
yeah,
that it was a right. But like, that's the kind of stuff that I'm just like, oh, we're only after the kill. We're only after this like one tiny thing. And we're not even thinking about, yeah, but what does that look like actualized for everyone? That's why this was important. That's why the like agnostic, it's not about Democrats or Republicans. It's about Americans. How do you want to live here? This is your home. Like, what do you want to be available to you and your family? Okay, great. Now, what are you willing to do to make sure that that is true for everyone?
Yeah, and I love what you said about critical thinking, because, I mean, I feel like for me, that's the part where I feel like I'm beating my head against the wall half the time, because it's like, we so lack critical thinking as a society. And I mean, again, I would argue that that's true on both sides of the equation. And so
I'm not guilty.
Yeah.
I'm totally guilty. Look, totally. I'm like this, you know, whatever. I'm educated. I have a graduate degree. I am an executive. I am a white female who is a homeowner. Like, go down the list of privilege.
Yeah.
And even more so, because I'm privileged, I don't think critically about stuff that
you take for granted.
Yeah, I should have been thinking about them. I really should have. And that, again, that's a reckoning that I'm having to, as part of the reason for the show, is I got to make this right. I've been a part of this problem.
Yeah. I want to talk more about the show. So the first episode is titled Rebranding the American Dream. I want you to talk a little about that phrase as a focal point for, you know, rebranding America. And maybe dive in a little bit to like, what is the format of the show? What can people expect when they tune in?
Yeah. So oh my God, like the process of even getting this thing organized, like in my head, was excruciating. But I realized the only real expertise that I have is in branding and marketing. And so in order to offer a unique perspective, I had to stay in my lane. I couldn't talk about the new Jim Crow. Like, there's a book for that, and everyone should read it. I am not a civil rights attorney. I am not an attorney at all. So, like, for me to go down a rabbit hole of like all the systemic issues that are problematic for our country, that was like, that's a dead end. Because I have no credibility. But when I really started to dig into, okay, well, if we bought into a message about this nation, that's a marketing issue. The brand issue is that we didn't deliver on it. What was the message we sold? Like, what was the promise? And I basically tracked it back to the American dream after doing a crap ton of research. And I realized that was the best kind of tagline, if we use like advertising speak or brand speak. That's the best tagline I could come up with that had some real legs, that has really impacted perception and behavior and like the cultural fabric of America for since at least the 1920s. And that's kind of what I hung my hat on for the opening. Like, that's kind of the root for everything. Let's, like, dig into the American dream. This is the bill of goods we've been sold from a marketing perspective. Like, what are the different iterations of it, and how did it not serve us? How does it not match up with our values? Where did we go wrong?
Where did you land? What is the American dream in 2020?
Oh, the American dream in 2020 is definitely, and this started back in the 70s, so it's just been a, like, snowball ever since. The American dream is all about profit over people. It's definitely materials over morality. And that flip, again, I talk about it in the first and second episode, that flip started happening in the 1960s and 70s, late 1960s, early 70s. Like, it's tracked. Like, it's, I think it's episode two where I, like, track where the flip happened.
Yeah, it's so sad.
Like, no, it really is, because that wasn't the intention of the phrase itself. But man, the proof of, like, kind of the disintegration of it is just like, holy shit. Wow, how powerful marketing is. And that's another thing where I'm like, you're going to get a history lesson that I didn't even know. Again, through a very specific lens of marketing and branding. I know that what I do is powerful, which is why I try very hard to wield it appropriately. But it's impacted an entire free nation. Like, marketing and advertising, we're real good at that in America. I think a conclusion that I came up with really throughout this process is that we are, as a nation, we are like one giant ad campaign. We don't have a brand. You open that ad campaign up and it's like, it's like little puffs of air. There's like very little substance.
Yeah.
And that was, man, that was hard pill to swallow.
What did you learn in this process that surprised you, or that maybe was unexpected?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that I learned in the process, one is just how powerful words really are. And I know that because that's my job. My job is to use language and, you know, campaigns and rhetoric to inform how people behave and inform their purchasing decisions about things like freaking laundry detergent. It's my job to get them, like, emotionally attached to things that, you know, really should only be reserved for, like, grandmas and puppies. And I just realized how powerful words really are, and how betrayed people feel when those words aren't backed up by action. I just realized how deep that went for America.
Yeah, I mean, so you allude to this notion of there being a time when, like, that promise was actually, like, legit, I guess, for lack of a better word. And I think today, for so many people, and, like, I question myself. I mean, I'm a white male that has, like, you know, all the privilege I possibly could. I even question myself, like, what is the American dream to me at this point? Like, I don't necessarily know the answer to that question. But I reflect more often than not on what must that look like for other people, because I do have so much in my life and I still aspire for more. I don't think that I have as much as my parents or my grandparents did, in terms of that, you know, quote unquote American dream. But then I look at people that are significantly less fortunate than me and I'm like, they'll never accomplish those things. And I don't know. I don't know how we get back to, like, that promise. And how it's applicable for everyone that participates.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things we have to get away from is this idea that in order for other people to have access to upward economic mobility, that means we have to get rid of large portions of our nest egg, or, you know, whatever we've earned by working hard. You know, that I think that's some of the polarizing language that we've kind of bought into with the American dream, is that anyone can have it if you just work hard enough.
Yeah, that's such a fallacy.
What's wrong with you? Like, and you know, as someone, I grew up under the poverty line. I grew up, you know, my parents were like living off of $500 a month. Like, I don't even, honestly, don't even know how that's possible, even in the 80s. But like, it's not. That's the problem. It's not possible.
Yeah.
And there are people who are doing the same now in 2020, if not less. And, you know, there's this thing in the back of, I think, my inherited psyche or rhetoric from, like, you know, that's passed down to my family, or what I absorbed, you know, rising up out of that, is that, well, we were at the bottom. Why can't other people?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, let me go down the list as to why that's not possible for a lot of people. Let's just take race, you know, and then you start to realize that, like, in this country, the American dream actually isn't possible for a good majority of Americans because of their skin color, because of the systems that we have created in order to make it impossible for them. That a lot of people like you and I are just like totally oblivious to, that hopefully we're now being made aware of.
Yeah.
But then even that, it's paralyzing, because like, oh my God, then everything's fucked. Like,
totally.
You know, so it's just like a never ending unraveling of horse shit.
that's a great metaphor.
But again, a lot of Americans have been living with their entire lives for generations after generations. And so I think the American dream hasn't been possible for a good number of people this entire time.
Yeah.
I think it has become increasingly less attainable for even white affluent individuals, because we have doubled down on our marketing efforts to equate the American dream with stuff instead of substance. And the goalpost keeps moving and multiplying. And now we're all slaves to, unfortunately, our own debt to this dream that we will never attain. And it's ironic. It's so ironic. And that's what privilege, that's what white supremacy, that's what it's like. This is the cancer that kills everyone, not just the people it was intended to kill.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff that I'm learning. Again, I hope people listen to this and they're like, oh, welcome to the club, lady. Yeah, I hope that happens, because you're not wrong. But like, these are the like eye-opening things that I learned as I was digging in.
Yeah, and I mean, I constantly refrain on like the notion of like two white people talking about privilege and like what, you know what I mean? Like what is that even, what is the purpose of that? I don't know. I think that like, because there's definitely, it's great to like acknowledge it, right? And then there's the next level of like, okay, well, let's have the conversation with people that like truly understand what our privilege looks like in ways that we never will, or, you know, it's a huge conversation, and I know, don't know that it's for this particular episode, but it's stuff that fascinates me nonetheless.
I will say that's where the hope lies for me, though. I think any amount of like white privilege that becomes acknowledged and like repurposed and redistributed for like full equality, that's hopeful for me. Anytime I get called out or am made aware of how short-sighted my perspective is, because just simply because I live in this system as a white female who benefits so much from the systems in place, right? No matter what BS I've had to go through and like sexism and blah, blah, blah. Like, it doesn't matter because at the end of the day, any amount that I can understand about the system that I've benefited from at the cost of somebody else's promise being met,
yeah,
is very valuable.
Well,
I don't want white people to like not feel like they, and I do think this is a time where people are like, well, I'm like, you're minimizing your own experiences.
Totally.
Fine, I think we should a little bit, to be honest.
Well, and it's like step one is like admitting you have the problem, right? Like that's,
yeah, totally.
That's,
it's like AA.
I do think right. There's something also to like, I mean, my struggle with that has been, you know, I am a white male, but I'm also a gay white male, right? So my experience looks very different than, you know, from like a straight dude. And you're a woman who, you know, women have their own set of, you know, complexities in terms of struggle. And so I don't discount any of that.
If we just understood what it felt like to be someone who something has happened to them that they didn't intend for their life. Have you ever lost a job unexpectedly? That should be almost like 90% of people this year. I lost my job unexpectedly this year, like totally came out of nowhere. And I'm like, yeah, I know what that feels like. It's embarrassing. I don't want to talk about it. I had no control over it. I feel shame. I want to isolate. And now I'm going to feel like super dumb when somebody asks about it. That's exactly what people feel every single time they're hit with oppression in this country.
Totally.
So for anyone to say, well, they just like, here are the circumstances and we're going to like wipe our hands of it. I'm like, you're missing the fundamental point.
Yeah.
We're neighbors. We're inextricably connected to each other. And you're not even seeing the common humanity in our shared suffering that this oppression is layering on all of us, period. No right, no left, no pro-life, pro-choice, no politicize this or that humans. And for whatever reason, the founding fathers chose words that all of us could relate to because we're humans who have been marginalized before. And then we built systems that only serve to protect the people who are already privileged and gave us reasons, gave us fear-based reasons that if I give it away to everyone, you will have less. And that is not how this works.
Yeah, so, I mean that's huge, right? Because I think we've seen such a, like the vast income disparity in this country, is a result of what you're saying, right? It proves that theory is not true because there's people that have far more than so many, and yet there's people that have nothing
at the expense of
totally
who
yeah totally
people we've already deemed who are not worthy of upward mobility.
Totally. Well, I want to, there's one more thing I want to ask you about before we start to wrap up in terms of current events. And it's a super current event, but I think it's an important one. RBG, talk about what her legacy means to you.
Yeah. Man, talk about methodical. You know, part of the, like I said before, part of the like, privilege in me is like so pissed that I went and protested and called senators and governors and sent postcards for Brianna, and like the outcome wasn't what I wanted. And I'm like, okay, well, the instant gratification of just like getting what I want doesn't work when matters of equality are at stake here. In this nation, it is a arduous process that I may never see in my lifetime. And I think about John Lewis. I think about RBG. I think about, I mean, literally, like all the Titans that we've lost this year. What a year to go.
Seriously.
Like, you worked so hard, so hard, to almost go to regress. I just think, I look at those legacies and I think it doesn't matter. Because what would we have done without them showing up every single day? Where would we be? Where would we be if Ruth hadn't figured out how to fight Supreme Court cases that were intentionally skewed to convince white men that they were losing equality because of current systems?
Yeah.
I mean, the 14th Amendment is proof of that. European Americans won, not just black slaves. You know, it's like we want to be citizens. And now we're like, everybody who was born here is a citizen. Who the fuck benefited the most from that situation? European immigrants.
Yep.
So, man, I just, what a legacy. What a commitment. It's the unsexy work of, even though I'm bored with it, even though I'm tired of it, even though I'm disappointed, I will not give up. And even if I don't see any of this happen in my lifetime, it's okay, because what would happen if I didn't?
Well, and that's it. That's the legacy, right? That's what we should all aspire for our legacy to be, because you don't necessarily her. I think I'm gonna ruin the quote, but one of her most famous quotes lives in the realm of like her descents were what she knew would.
The future.
That's the future, and she knew that, and so she knew that she wasn't going to experience that in that moment, for obvious reasons. But she knew that that's what the future would be. And so I think that is also the lesson, right? It's the persistence, it's the understanding that eventually things are okay, I guess.
Yeah. But even not, I mean, for her, what's so powerful is that she, it was through and through her marriage. And you know, that's something I tell people all the time. I'm like, equality starts at home.
Totally.
Like, you think these movements have to be, especially today in, you know, the social media era. It's like, well, it's not worth it if I don't get enough likes, or if I didn't get enough of this, or if I didn't get enough of that. And I'm like, the most power that we have are with our direct sphere of influence, not with strangers. So where am I practicing these behaviors that I hope become like a cultural narrative in my own home? Because if I can't even do it in the walls of my own home, how the fuck do I expect anybody else to do it with my fancy language? It's just clickbait then. It's not substance.
Well, it's in your own home, but it's in your own actions that you take every day, right? I mean, like,
Sure,
this podcast is
sure.
a perfect example of that. It's like, I don't know if thousands of people are going to hear it or five people are going to hear it. And
Doesn't matter.
if there's two people out of five that are impacted by it and it causes them to go out and try to make a difference in the world, then cool, we've accomplished something, you know? And I think
Sure.
that's how I look at every action that I take in that realm, because it's like, it doesn't matter. It's doing good for the sake of doing good. And I have to believe that that is sufficient.
Can I just say, Austin Channing Brown yesterday, after the Breonna Taylor verdict came out, she's like, it's good to be angry. It's real good to be angry. She was like, but I need you to ask yourself, what does my anger require of me?
Yeah.
And I think that's another critical question. Like, that's critical thinking. I can be angry. It could be a righteous anger for injustice. But what does that anger require of me to make this mean something and not just be another, like, well, another disappointment, chalk it up to the American, you know, justice system. What does it require of me? And maybe for some of us who have been like, this is the case we committed to, maybe we keep pushing. even though the law says, oh, it's over, it's closed. We're like, we don't think so. We're
Well,
gonna just keep showing up. That's interesting to me.
what it requires, I agree. What it requires of you right now in this moment, though, is to get your ass out there and vote. And it's to vote for the change that you wish to see. I mean, that's the only way we're going to influence any of this, right? It's voting, and it's not just at the, national level, it's at the state and local level. It's at all levels of your government, and understanding that, like, a lot of the systemic issues aren't even a national thing. It's
No.
state and local, right? And you
Prosecutors.
totally.
Prosecutors are a huge one. And I will say too, this is something that I've learned. I didn't know, this is so dumb, and this is probably going to get cut out of here because we've already been talking forever, just because I love you. But I didn't know that when you get released from prison and are like slapped with felony charges for having, less marijuana on you than like a college frat boy would have. I didn't know that you had fines that like keep you from voting. It's like a voter tax.
Keep
Like
you
if you
from
don't
having
pay.
your rights? Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I didn't. This is how like so ignorant I am to our system. So like now I feel like a attorney because I read the new Jim Crow and highlighted the fuck out of it and had a book club and now I'm like, oh yeah, see, I'm like so smart. But I told my husband, I was like, we need to pay these fines for people so they can vote.
Well, you've got Bloomberg and a bunch of people doing that right now in
He
Florida,
just did
right?
it, and then
Yeah.
LeBron James just did it, and I was like, that's strategic as hell and humane and just.
And
That
you've
is
got the.
liberating people, like equality, liberty, and justice. It hits every single one of those. There is no reason that someone with a nonviolent offense who is deemed a felon should not be able to vote.
So, a fucking men to that. But then on the other side of that coin, you've got the Bill Barr Justice Department now that's investigating to find out if that's legal for them to be able to do that. So, I think, again, it comes back to voting. Your convictions, voting your heart and your soul, and believing that with that vote and with that conviction, right will be done. Justice will prevail. We are super over time, and I don't know how much of this I'm going to edit because I think that a lot of it's really
Just cut
important.
it all out.
Well, no, I think a lot of it's really important, and so maybe it just ends up being our super long episode. But I do want to go back to your show really quick because I want to ask you what are you hoping that. If I watch all six episodes of this, what are you hoping is my takeaway? What are you hoping I, what is the revelation that you're hoping people come to after watching this?
I hope it just makes you question everything that you've ever thought was certain. Because I think there's something good to that. To make your own decision, not just inherit something that you felt you were supposed to do for whatever reason, politically or as an American. I hope it makes people question. At whose expense am I able to feel that equality, liberty, and justice for all is real? And honestly, I hope it makes people, not makes people feel, but I hope it gives people a pathway to take one step towards active engagement in our democracy. Like truly, because I really don't think that we know what we have now that we're on the brink of losing it.
So with that, and with everything that's going on in the news and the world leading up to this big moment, that will be the election in a few weeks, or maybe it's past, depending on when you hear this conversation. Hopefully it ended well, God willing. Do you find yourself more optimistic, pessimistic? Where did you land after this?
I am willing. I'm neither optimistic or pessimistic. I think I am willing and I have a lot of stamina. So I'm ready to hold whoever wins accountable. I am no longer of the assumption that, okay, cool, the person that I liked won, so
The work is
like,
done.
oh yeah, the work, whatever, they'll get it taken care of.
Yeah.
There's no turning back for me. So I don't know that I'm optimistic or pessimistic, but I'm ready. I'm ready to do the work for the rest of my life to make sure that we live up to what we say we stand for.
What has you hopeful?
What has me hopeful are the sheer number of people that, like, they just haven't given up. Man, for generations. So again, like those of us who are new to this fight, we've got a lot of people to learn from. That makes me so hopeful.
And
You know,
we have a lot of
it's
people on the right
insane.
side too. I think that's
Yeah.
also what you're saying, but I think that's really important to acknowledge is that there's a lot of people on the side of good.
There are, and I know we live in a time where it's like impossible to ignore like hate and whatever, like the algorithms are bent towards that. I would just highly encourage people to just take a break from news and social media. Tap into what you, I always say, what breaks people's heart. Like, what breaks your heart? Like, if you hear something and you just go into a spiral, that's a good place to start. Like, what makes you so angry? That's a good place to start. And just start moving. Start doing something about it.
Yeah. And the algorithms, we didn't even get into that.
We don't need to because there is a documentary on Netflix.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. Oh, there's absolutely a documentary on Netflix. It's The Social Experiment. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I think so.
It's something in that realm. I'll put in the link in the show notes, but you must watch it. It's fantastic.
Freaking that and the new Jim Crow, and so you want to talk about race, and I'm still here, Black Dignity, and a something by Austin Channing Brown. All of those. 1619. I can give you a list of show notes stuff.
Send it over. Send it all over. We'll put it in there for the people. Well, my dear, I am so proud of what you've done with this, and I'm so looking forward to the world seeing it and hearing your message. Please tell us how we can watch it and how we can connect with you and all that good stuff.
I am on Instagram. I love Instagram. Krista Michelli. Rebranding America is on Instagram. I also have the YouTube channel under my name as well, Krista Michelli, where Rebranding America will live. So you can
Cool.
find me there.
Well, I wish you the best of luck with all of this. And yeah, please keep in touch and keep us posted on how it all turns out.
I
I
will.
remain optimistic.
Good. Good. We need that.
All right, I'd like to thank you so much for listening today. Now, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, as it's the best way to discover new episodes of the show. And please be sure to share this episode with anyone you think could benefit from hearing it. For more information, please visit thinkoutsidethelines.com.